Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
ES Audio.
From the Evening Standard in London, I'm Rochelle Travers, and this is The Leader.
My lords and members of the House of Commons.
A Queen's speech, but with someone very important missing.
Her Majesty's government's priority is to grow and strengthen the economy and help ease the cost of living for families.
It was the first time Her Majesty had missed the state opening of Parliament for 59 years, resulting in a historical moment that gave us a taste of what the future might look like. Robert Jobson is the Evening Standard's royal editor.
I think this is a very significant moment in the history of the House of Windsor because for the first time what we're seeing is the monarchy in transition right in front of us. What you saw today at the when Prince of Wales read the Queen's speech on her behalf is really what's going to be happening going forward. It's noteworthy, I think, that he was in his military uniform, you know, because as a monarch, he'll be head of the armed forces as well, like the Queen is, and that Prince William was dressed in mourning dress, as he is, Prince Charles, when he accompanied the Queen. It was quite spooky also seeing the crown just at the side of the Prince of Wales, and he was pictured photographing, looking at it. You know, at the moment, I think what we need to look at is what happens next. What's going to happen in the future? Clearly, the Queen is struggling with mobility issues, and I don't think that's going to improve, you know, from 96 onwards. It's an issue. So I think that the constitutional monarchy needs to address this situation so it doesn't weaken its position. At the moment, you know, the polls are saying that the Republican ideas are gaining ground, but polls are polls. If the monarchy and the system wants to continue in the way it is, it needs to sort of sort its act out. Really. And I think that they need to stop saying that the Queen will announce things on the day, because all that does is lead to media speculation, not only in the UK, but all around the world. And so what they need to say is that the Prince of Wales is effectively in the position of regent. He doesn't have to be regent, but that he is effectively doing the job.
Mobility issues was one of the reasons mentioned about her absence. What do we know about the Queen's current health?
Well, the Queen has missed a number of duties, and I think coming up to the Jubilee, we shouldn't really expect too much of her either. I hope she'll be on the balcony for the major, you know, cheering and sing songs, and so she can be appreciated. But if not, she'll certainly be in a position where she can hear the adulation. I really think that we don't know anything about the health, and we wouldn't know anything about the health. Everything talking about health is speculation. But what we do know is that she has issues, probably with her back. I understood that she had it was something to do with when she was out riding several months ago, that, you know, her back was bad. And she's having people look at it, but we don't know really about medical stuff. She's not ill. She's just basically struggling to walk. At 96, that's not unusual.
The Queen has a number of duties that she carries out. How important is this particular one that she's missed?
Well, when the Queen was unavailable to read the Queen's speech in the past, it was because she was pregnant, I think, with Prince Andrew and Prince Edward, and that was understandable. You know, she was effectively on maternity leave. Yes, I think this is significant, and I think that it shows, because it's to do with the actual workings of state. You know, everything else that she's missed, really, you know, even the Maun Day service, these are all more to do with optics. These are things that the monarch does out as, if you like, the head of the nation. But as head of state, the actual moment when the Queen enters the chamber, addresses the Lords and the members of Parliament as the sovereign, she's reading what's been written for her by the government. But that's just a structure. You know, that's just the way it's been evolved over years. This is her speech about her government. And when she can't do that, it's changing the look. And in my opinion, that's when we have an Act of Parliament, that Regency Act, that hasn't been enacted since 1810, which should come into play, or at least be considered to come into play after the Jubilee celebrations. That doesn't mean she'd ever abdicate, and that will never happen. It would mean that simply that the Prince of Wales could then just get on with being effectively the king, the leader, doing the job that's involved as a regent, as the Prince Regent did before in the reign of George III, before he became George IV in 1820. So that you can just get up, the matters of state just continue and without any problem. It doesn't mean that our 96-year-old monarch is abdicating or her responsibilities. It just, all it means is that, you know, it's time for her to put her feet up. And if you can't put your feet up at 96, and I don't really know when you can, it's significant, I think, that the Duke of Edinburgh, you know, he retired effectively at 95, because he said he was forgetting things, and he wasn't really in tune with how he should be, and he said he'd done his bit. Well, I'm sure if everybody would agree that as long as Elizabeth is alive, she's the Queen, but she has done her bit. There is no need. She's not letting anyone down. She's never let anyone down in her entire life. So this wouldn't be that. I just think it would give us clarity with regard to the functions of state.
It was our first glimpse into the future with Prince Charles making this speech. How did he do?
Well, the Prince of Wales is the most prepared monarch in waiting ever, and is an incredibly accomplished man, a man of vision, great energy, but also somebody who understands the workings of the constitutional monarchy probably better than anybody. And I think that, yes, of course, he did, as he's done with every time he stepped up to come into play and to actually help fulfill the matters of state or fulfill the Queen's engagements. He's done it with aplomb. But that's not really the issue. I think the big issue is here that needs to be addressed by the palace is that every time they announce that the Queen can't turn up for something, I will go on television to millions of people in America. So all my colleagues on the Royal Beat will be doing exactly the same. I'll be talking to Australia, where the Queen is already, it's a realm, it's therefore she's head of state there. This doesn't help the visual or the impact of our system around the world. What would help would be clarity. And the only way you can get clarity is to either say that the Queen is just going to step down or step aside, the Prince of Wales will continue and fulfil her role as the Prince of Wales, or if that's not suitable for Parliament, for a Regency Act to be brought into play so that he can become Prince Regent until the sad day that he becomes the King. Sad, because it would mean the death of the Queen.
Prince William was also in attendance today. What should we take from that?
I think it's quite significant, too, that Prince William so early on has been invited to join his father and the Duchess of Cornwall in this event, because what we saw is the picture of the future, the way things will probably happen. But what I think that was doing, you know, was because, of course, Charles one day will be king. We don't know for how long and when. His wife will be queen consort, very different from being our queen, who is, of course, queen regnant. She's the same powers and the same position as a king. But William being brought in so quickly shows that there's a sense that, you know, they have to appeal not only to the older generation, the traditionalists, but also the younger generation, and that there is continuity there from the outset by having William next to his father. It doesn't mean they're sharing the role, not far from it. What it means is that it's clear that just through the age of the people involved, that the Prince of Wales, you know, won't reign, say, as long as the Queen, and obviously not as probably, God, you know, depending on what happens, but not as long as Prince William. So there has to be a sense of continuity, and that, I think, is what they're trying to portray there.
Let's go to the ads. Stay there to hear more from the Evening Standard's Jack Kessler about the announcements that were made. Whilst you're here, why not give the leader a rate and follow? Welcome back. The speech today outlined 38 bills, including 7 measures scrapping EU regulation, covering areas from data reform to gene editing to financial services, as the Evening Standard's Jack Kessler explains.
Well, there were a number of announcements. As you said, there were 38 bills. So you've got a levelling up and regeneration bill, an energy security bill, renters reform bill, Brexit Freedoms Bill, and a bill that would pave the way for the sale of Channel 4. But I think what was most notable was what wasn't there, which was an explicit bill to help with the cost of living crisis right now. Partly that's because the opportunity for that really was the spring statement in March, and the government didn't really take it.
So a lot of people will have been watching, hoping to see something to help with the cost of living crisis. Was there anything?
No, I mean, the Queen's speech and the state opening of Parliament isn't a fiscal event, which is why, you know, the government has two main opportunities to do that, once in the spring statement and then in the autumn for the budget. And it seems very much like the government wants to wait until the autumn, wait to see the extent to which the energy price cap is lifted. The Bank of England projects 40%. The problem is, for a lot of people already dealing with near double-digit inflation, that it's frankly going to be too late, or at least much later than they would like.
What are the positives to take away from today?
I mean, I suppose if you're someone who takes an optimistic view on Brexit, the burning of burdensome EU red tape, although the number of times that's been announced and not very much comes of it, is quite frequent. I suppose the biggest takeaway is sort of what didn't make it into the speech was the various saber-rattling around the UK scrapping the Northern Ireland Protocol. I suppose the government is right when it says that economic growth is the way out of this malaise. The problem is economic growth is really hard to do. If it wasn't, you know, everyone would do it and you wouldn't get trapped in middle-income status. But starting a trade war with the EU would be the antithesis of an economic growth plan.
And that's it from The Leader. This podcast is back tomorrow at 4 p.m.